I'm Nicole.
And I'm Monica.
And we're two fangirls who like to talk about media and knit. This is our podcast, While We Were Knitting. This month, we watched the first three episodes of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is the latest Marvel Universe property focusing on our title characters after the end of the blip when billions of people returned after being missing for 5 years. Because we're watching over a couple of weeks, since it comes out weekly, over these 3 weeks, I have knit the Barnloft Hat by Kelly McClure and Impervious by Kim McBrien Evans.
And to be fair, I cheated. I knew that I was going to want to pay a lot of attention to what was going on in the screen. So I specifically continued the Jane Jacobs shawl by Kristen Kapoor because I knew I could knit that in my sleep by now.
Yeah.
And I knit the Molly hat by Erin Ruth, which is a cabled hat project that I had previously done before.
Nice. I also don't think that's cheating. I think that's very wise strategic versions to be like, let me match my project to what I'm watching and how much attention I want to pay to it. And that Kristen Kapoor shawl has been very good to you. This is like
it has
third or fourth version to it. Not third or fourth. Sorry. Third or fourth time you've mentioned it. So I think we can start by talking about our thoughts on Marvel in general, because the Marvel universe has expanded so much that I think it's hard to, at this point, consider any property completely separate from the entire universe creation that they're engaged in. My relationship to Marvel since about 2014, which actually was right after Winter Soldier came out, and it was a while ago, but I got kind of sick of the fact that like all of their main characters were white dudes named Chris. I'm like, there's no women of any race, no men of color, just like everybody is named a white dude named Chris. Cause that was also right when Guardian of the Galaxy was coming out, and you know, it's just like, I can't deal with that anymore. So I took a break from Marvel, missed the third Winter Soldier, missed all of the second, third Avengers movies. I just haven't seen anything besides. I went back to the theaters for Thor because I do love Thor. Like, I'm very weak to Thor and Loki, for Black Panther, and then for Captain Marvel. So that's kind of what I consumed and what I thought about. And interestingly, I do feel like this series works for me, even though I haven't necessarily seen all the preceding canon, just because I can figure out what's going on based on just spoilers, basically. I'm like, I know what the blip is. Somebody spoiled me for it. So, yeah.
I suspect the blip is unmissable by this point. It's become such a thing. My relationship with Marvel was very much as a diehard fangirl for a long, long time. I got my first Marvel comics when I was about 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and I collected Captain America comics for about 14 years.
That's a lot of years.
I was a diehard fangirl. And when the first Avengers movies came out, I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. And then I watched it, and then I watched it five more times in the theaters.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. I still remember recovering from surgery, and when my friend who was helping take care of me asked me what I wanted to go watch, I was like, can we go to the theater and watch the Avengers again? Okay. Yeah. So I have seen every single one in the theaters, and I have seen every single one more than once in the theaters, and I own all of them. So
listen, you gotta like what you like.
It's very true. I wrote Captain America fanfic for about 4 years.
Movieverse or comicverse?
It started out inspired by Movieverse, and then it turned into comicverse. Because at that point, I think Winter Soldier had just come out by the time I sort of trailed off on writing that. So I was because of sort of my long history, I was much more familiar with the comicverse at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I got out of comics about the whole time of about a couple of years before the Captain America is Hydra thing.
Oh, yeah. People are big mad about that. Like, I'm on the comic side, usually been more of a DC girl, was not actively really following anything at that point, but people, I heard about that from several people that were not happy.
No, yes. So, I mean, I was out by that point and I heard about it.
Yeah. Which was a bad storyline, so people should have shouted them.
Yes,
I'm glad I
But yes, I have been very happy with the movies for the most part, as my fangirlishness probably shows. And I'm very glad that the recent series have started to include many old familiar faces, both from the movies and people who we knew from comic books, but who never actually had the chance to show up in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching the second episode where they introduce, to just launch into it, where they introduce Lamar, whose last name I've probably forgotten, Hutchins? Something?
Hutchins, yeah, Battlestar.
And Battlestar, and like Bucky got really at Matt, and I was like, is this something that I should know about? And I was like, Googling, like, what is going on? And the fact that in comics, there had been five people who had subsequently inherited the Bucky mantle as if it were the Robin mantle. I was like, oh, wow, that was a choice that they were making, weren't they? That was interesting. And I like, with that knowledge afterwards, it was fun to like watch that little scene again and be like, oh, I see why he's like, you're not my replacement and I don't like being replaced. And like, I see what you're going on with here. That was quite fun. But yeah. No, I'm less familiar with the background. So definitely if I say something and it's not accurate to either like when it has come out or like you're like, let me tell you some things about comics, just let me know, because I am going into this with less knowledge than I usually do. So I did rewatch the Winter Soldier movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
It's very fun. And the parts, I don't enjoy the fight scenes super much. They weren't compelling to me, but the parts whenever the characters were just talking to each other about stuff were great. Like the fact that the movie opens up with the on your left with Sam and Steve was amazing. So much fun. And reading the post about how Steve's path makes zero sense unless he was basically like stalking Sam around and then being like, no, I can't stalk this nice man around, but I want you. You're like, oh, okay. That makes it like even better to know this is an insane path. And like, it was great to just read that little analysis. One of the other things that was like a Tumblr post back from, you know, probably about 2013, 2014 when these movies first came out, and I think about it all the time, is it was a picture of, and apologies, my cat is destroying her scratching tree, so apologies if you can hear that, but was a picture of Sam Wilson just like looking at the camera and being like, you know what this sure is made of? Husband material. And I was like, that's correct. That sure is made of husband material. So having the series open up like with Sam ironing a shirt, obviously not a callback to that because this is like a random Tumblr post from 2014, but like yes, that shirt is made of husband material. So that was like a fun launching off point too.
For me the sort of mirror to Winter Soldier was the fact that, oh, here we go again with the jumping out of the back of the plane. Isn't that how Winter Soldier started?
Yeah, he does jump out of the plane.
He does. Steve jumps out the plane and then he has a big beat up fight with Batroc the Leaper, who guess what? Is back again. Yes, in the plane, the Algerian dude. Yeah. I was like, wait, why do all the bad guys speak French? Oh, it's the same guy. Yeah.
Oh, recurring character. Nice use.
Yes, nice use. Also, very good use of not putting him in that, like, he used to be in a full body purple bodysuit. Was his original outfit. So kudos on them getting rid of that. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I think something to think about like superhero kind of aesthetics. And I think this movie is very interested in the aesthetics of superheroes because of the way it's interested as Captain America as propaganda. Mm-hmm. Like it's very explicitly like John Walker. I think his name is Walker. Anyways, oh, name him John. I actually felt like a really fun touch. I was like, everything about this dude, he looks like an off-brand. My friend was like, he looks like a slightly off-brand, untrustworthy Chris Evans. And I was like,
yes,
accurate.
Yes, accurate.
Yeah. And the fact that he does look like Chris Evans, kind of, is a nice, like, you know, you're like, the resemblance is there.
Yeah.
Is, I think, a nice touch in the casting to like really give you that understanding, like the US military was like, if they're doing propaganda, they're like, yeah, this dude, he's you know, moderately attractive, and we want that for our piece of propaganda. And to have both his girlfriend and his friend be like, actually part of the job is just like shaking a bunch of people's hands and being like, I love America. And then Sam also mentioned that in his speech at the Smithsonian when he was donating the shield, he's like, you know, Steve was struck a heroic pose like no one's business. Yeah. And you're like, yeah. And having that exhibit in the Smithsonian have a lot of the, you know, World War II propaganda featuring Steve Robbins being like, every bond is a bullet in your best man's gun and all that good stuff, I think was also just a good touch there. So,
oh man, I hadn't seen any previews, so I did not know what to expect. I was like, oh, Bucky and Sam running around doing stuff, quibbling with each other because they never really got along. I'm okay. And then like when Sam's sister called him and was like, you've got to see this, I honestly thought it was going to be like some horrible disaster had just happened. And then this guy walks out in the Captain America suit and I was like, oh no. Yeah. Like my heart just dropped. I was like, oh, I did not know that was going to happen. And I should have known that was going to happen, frankly, because like I know how the comics go and I know but oh, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed the shots of both Bucky and Sam's face. I think it was in the second episode when they were watching him be introduced as the new Captain America. Mm-hmm. Just like absolute like devastation and betrayal, mm-hmm. that, you know, on Sam's part that he had turned the shield over and was like, okay, this is part of history. It's going to sit in a museum. And on Bucky's part of watching somebody else who was not Steve pick up that Captain America mantle. Yeah. And just both of them being really upset about it, it was like, I think, very emotionally effective to mm-hmm. see that and mm-hmm. to set up kind of the relationship that they would already walk into the new Captain America with, regardless of who he really was.
Sure.
Which is kind of an asshole.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. He's kind of an asshole. I do think they did a good job with the villains, both with, or quote unquote villains, like the antagonists, mm-hmm. both on John Walker and with Carly What if I could say last names? I can't.
Carly.
To paint them as coming from a sympathetic place. Like, even if you don't agree with the actions, I think, you know, having somebody be like, you know, I really dedicated my life to this country and I want to help people feel safe. And then taking up the Captain America shield, even if then he becomes an asshole and like, is not like your favorite person. You're like, you know, this is a person who's not, I initially thought between the first and the second episode, I was like, maybe he's a Hydra plant. And I'm like, he doesn't seem like he's a Hydra plant. Might he be an enhanced super soldier because the government has that information? Possibly. Haven't ruled it out. Entirely possible. But he doesn't seem like he's part of Hydra, at least three episodes in. And then Carly, who is, you know, really seeing herself as fighting on the side of righteousness and trying to help people, mm-hmm. is also like, in a lot of ways, has very sympathetic motivations. She wants to help these people who have been displaced and are living in really dire conditions. So you're like, okay, even if they are ultimately the antagonists, and if I don't ultimately agree with the actions, we're coming at it where nobody is like a monster.
Yes, agree. Which is a big departure from the aesthetic that they picked up sort of at the end of the, you know, at the end of the last Marvelverse, because mm-hmm. Thanos was a monster. I mean, he saw himself as being a hero, but no one else did. Yes. I mean, he's absolutely. Like, yes, we are going to wipe out all life everywhere, half of it, because that'll be better. And everyone's like, no. Whereas in this situation, yeah, you could totally see where John Walker's coming from. And you can totally see where Carly is coming from, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they stole this super soldier serum specifically so they could make other people's lives better. That was you know, her whole team's goal. And it's like, and I was really starting to feel for her up until she blew up the supply depot.
Yes. And I think that's the point where they were like, you know, we want you to understand these people. We don't want them to be excessively sympathetic, because I don't think a superhero story, I should say more precisely, works if the antagonist is entirely sympathetic.
Correct.
Like you do have to have that piece. And I actually really, I was like, oh, we're doing terrorism. I know about terrorism. So I was like sitting there like trying to like pick up this book that I had read back in, I went through like a period back in like 2009 to 2011 where I was very into like learning about like the war on terror and like what mm-hmm. that looked like in a global perspective, and what does counterterrorism do, or what is it trying to do, and what can it fail to do. I was sitting there looking up a book called What Terrorists Want mm-hmm. by Louise Richardson. I wrote that down because I was like, I'm not going to remember it otherwise, to be like, okay, so we are now situating this person as somebody who commits, And it's debatable whether it's terrorism, because at least by the definition from this book, it's a strike against a civilian target. And I was like doing my rewatch to, you know, catch all the details. And I was like sitting there, like looking at my screen being like, okay, I think those are all like guards with a GDC or GRC or whatever that organization is called. Yeah. But yeah, so I was like, oh, interesting. So that's kind of the frame that I'm going to be keeping in mind for that. And just thinking about when I look at that. So another question that I actually have for you, since I know you're very into the comics. This was something that like floated by on my radar at some point, and I never really got into it. But did you ever read in the comics, were you still following when Isaiah's storyline happened in comics?
I don't know if Isaiah's storyline came back, but there, as you probably know, after Steve got frozen in ice, there were a number of Captain Americas, and Isaiah was one of them. He was, I believe, the only Black Captain America before Falcon, who did become Captain America at some point.
In the comics.
Yeah, but I don't remember exactly what happened to him, but he did. He was one of those... He was one of those in a long line of the super soldier serum never did anyone any good except Cap. None of the Captain, like some of the Captain Americas went mad. Some of them like turned against the state. And I believe he was one of the ones who turned, but I'm not exactly sure. But yes, it was a much older storyline, I believe, unless they brought it back. It was a storyline from, I think, the 70s.
So interestingly, so there was a storyline in 2003, which is what I had at one point like seen just a brief summary and like a couple of snippets from, where they explicitly were like, the government experimented on 300 Black soldiers in an attempt to recreate the super soldier serum. And I think the author's name is Trenter. My handwriting is bad. But the storyline, the book was called Red, White, and Black. And it was explicitly a commentary on medical experimentation done by the U.S.
Yes,
government.
I didn't own that one, but I did. I do remember spotting it. Yes.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Horrible sense? It really does.
Yeah. And when what's his face, the doctor who created the super serum soldier, was like, yeah, I was employed by the CIA for a while. I'm like, genuinely, the only surprise that I have here is that you aren't still employed by the CIA.
Right. Right.
Because that was what I thought that was going to happen. I was like, okay, who has super soldier serum, especially after we were introduced to Isaiah in the series as somebody who had been imprisoned by the United States and had samples taken.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like who has access to this data? The United States government. Why wouldn't they be the originators of the super serum soldier? Like, of course, that makes perfect sense.
That's totally what I thought was going to happen as well. It didn't, surprisingly, but yes.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, I appreciated the reflections of current society and the social commentary in that. Yes. Like when the police pulled up outside of Isaiah's house and they were like harassing Sam, and Bucky was like, leave him the hell alone. Yeah. Like, is he bothering you, sir? No, he's not bothering you. It's almost comical if you think about it, because like Bucky can like squash Sam like a fly. But yeah, I was like, oh, I'm so uncomfortable right now. And I know exactly why I'm so uncomfortable right now. And I really appreciate that they made this very intentional choice to include this in, you know, something that's on Disney Plus.
No, the creator of the series, and he's, I think, also was one of the main writers, is Malcolm Spellman. And he explicitly, he's a Black man. And he explicitly was like, I want to include, you know, our current social structures, including race and racism and all that entails in this movie. And I really appreciate it as something that's obvious, but like handled very deftly. Because sometimes you can see these sort of things and people are, you know, trying to put in good messages, but it feels very clunky. And this is something that feels very deft, and just kind of like bringing it in and having it be part of that series, but not like lecturing the audience in a way that feels shoved in or awkward. So.
I agree. It felt very natural. And it very much sort of made the whole thing seem a little bit more real rather than the whole, you know, superheroes live in this distant society kind of thing. Like he was trying, they were trying to get a loan from the bank.
I was so happy during that part. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, no, I do want to know how superheroes make a living.
Right.
Ask me this question. Tell me about this. I mean, I was not happy that Sam and his sister were being denied a loan, but I was like, I'm glad that we're getting into like how, what is the logistics of superheroing?
Right. I mean, so, I guess I always sort of assumed that Stark supported them.
Yeah, same. He's like, so Tony Stark isn't paying for you? And I'm like, this is what fan fiction has taught me happens. Tony Stark isn't paying for the Avengers. And they were like, no. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, that, you know.
Yeah.
That's fine. So, yeah. And I appreciated also the way that the first episode was a little slow, especially considering it's only going to be a 6-part series, but I did appreciate the way they very much grounded these two men in lives. Like they have lives that both include, you know, their superheroing, but are in extension to that, you know, Sam and his sister and his family. And he's, you know, with his sister where she's selling her catch, and he knows all these people. He's like, oh, like, how are you doing? Like everything's cool. And like that one guy tries to borrow money off him. He's like, yeah, you know. And then in a way that's a little bit different, but Bucky is also kind of trying to get to that point where he can have a society and a group of people he knows outside of the fact that he was like, he's, you know, outside of time because of being a super soldier who was a mind wipe assassin for 70 years. Mm-hmm. And just having that engagement with the waitress whose name I've also forgotten. And
she wasn't given a name. And in fact, in the subtitles, she is listed as girl.
Oh no.
Mm-hmm. She was never given a name.
I don't love that.
I don't either. That's why I was like, that's how I knew when she was speaking. I was like, well, I know you're not going to be a recurring
And then having that friendship with Mr. Nakazawa. And initially I thought that actually he was, and I, like, again, I have not seen the first Captain America movie since it probably came out. Like, maybe.
Oh, you thought it was going to be their teammate.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was. I was like, oh, he doesn't know anybody except for the people who were there with him. And then I did a little bit of math because, so, 3 out of my 4 grandpas were World War II vets. And then I was like, oh, yeah, my only grandpa who's still alive from that is, like, 95-year-olds and, like, not doing well enough to live independently. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But he's, he would not be, well, like, he would be too old, basically, to be like living on his own than that same sort of way. So I was like, okay, no, now that we've actually clarified, but like the first watch through until we hit the part where he's like, oh, my son.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is just like his old army buddy. So
I thought that too, because I was like, oh, you know, he's hanging out with because I mean, one of my grandmothers is 97 and she lives by herself. So
wow.
I was like, yeah, it's okay, theoretically possible.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he started talking in Japanese about about the daifuku, the mochi. And I was like, oh no, it's the kid. It's the kid that he shot. Oh yeah. No. Yeah.
No. So that was also definitely something that I like was like, oh, then picked up a little bit more that second time around. Can we also talk about how bad his therapist is?
Oh my God, she's awful. I'm like, oh yeah, I was a great soldier. I'm like, but you're not a great therapist.
You're an awful therapist. I'm like, I hope you're not actually a practicing therapist. Like genuinely, I hope this is like some sort of like psychological operation they're running against Bucky and you're not a real therapist because like, you're so bad at this. Like that whole part that she had them do in the room where she's like, we're gonna do couples therapy. And on one hand, I'm like, I love this. I love that they're being forced to interact as if they're a couple. But on the other hand, this is very bad therapy. Like you're very bad at this. He is correct.
Though it was hilarious.
It was very, oh my God. Like, we're gonna figure out the legs. Yeah. We're just up close and personally proud of the face, and I'm sitting at the screen going, yes.
Me too. I was like, there was definitely some blooper version where one of those jerks reached out and grabbed you. Just know there was.
But yeah, and at one point he's like, you're a very bad therapist. And the other thing that I found interesting is that we don't see any like real evidence that he's getting proper psychiatric care, as I would evaluate it, but he at least can get to the point where he's like, if Steve was wrong about you, Sam, to give you the shield, then that might mean he's wrong about me. Oh, and I was like,
that was so heartbreaking. Yeah.
It was really heartbreaking, but I was also just like, wow, I'm surprised that you've come to the psychological recollection, because that's like a level of emotional maturity I wasn't, or not emotional maturity, but emotional intelligence I wasn't necessarily expecting for him to be able to articulate that.
He did spend some time in Wakanda, and they seem to be pretty good at stuff over there.
Yes, true. Maybe he got his good therapy in Wakanda, and he just has to keep seeing this lady. So
he does. Yeah. He gets arrested for not having gone to see her.
I know. And then the fact that she's also connected to the new Cap is like very shady.
Yeah.
But, and I also enjoyed that they tied in at the end of episode 3 when Bucky went, I was like, I'm going for a walk. I didn't necessarily see what was going to happen. But when he picked up the first little bead, I was like, oh, that's a Wakanda bead. Because I remember, because Wakanda, the Black Panther movie is, again, one of the few movies that I saw after 2014. Yeah. And I've seen that movie like 6 or 7 times. Yeah. I just put it on and I'm like, yeah, time to watch Black Panther.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, it's a Wakanda bead. So it was nice to be like, oh, I'm correct. Yeah. And they set it up earlier in the movie when Sam was like, do you think the Wakandans have forgotten that he killed him, T'Challa? Because they have not. Probably not.
Yep.
Probably not. So
that's can nice we talk moment. About Baron Zemo though? I mean,
he's Batman. I know nothing about Baron Zemo because I didn't see any of those movies, but I was like, oh, he's just Batman. I understand. Continue.
I forgot you hadn't seen them. Yes. I mean, he's a bad dude. And I was like, wow. Tables are turning all over the place. I mean, I totally expected Bucky to have broken him out without like Sam's know-how or say so. Yeah, 100%. We knew that was going to happen. Yeah. But I didn't expect him to come back. I think I thought he was dead. But not. That was one of the movies I found uncomfortable to watch too many times because I don't like it when my boys fight. So, but yes, I appreciate that they brought him back in this way, and I really like what they did with Sharon.
It was good to get Sharon back again. I didn't see the last, I keep saying this, but yeah, I had no idea what Sharon was doing besides what Sam gave us. They were very good at also putting in information in the dialogue to be like, and yeah, remember how Sharon was on the run because she's branded an enemy of the state? And it's like, oh, I really appreciate the way they remind you slightly earlier in the series or at some point, like, oh, heads up, this person exists, this is what happened to them, and then they introduced them, but in a way that's again not clunky or like a problem.
But it is sort of hilarious that, oh yes, they got everyone pardoned but forgot about Sharon. I was like, oh, flinch. Thanks. They totally did forget about Sharon, like she hasn't made an appearance in many of the previous movies.
Fair. Yeah. No, that's not surprising. And I also do feel like Sharon is definitely working for somebody else. My current hypothesis is that it's the power broker, but I can't actually prove that. They just keep talking about the power broker, so I'm assuming he. Do we know if it's a he?
I don't think they do. I think they I can't remember if they've used gendered pronouns.
I don't think they have.
Reference to the person, yeah.
But we know that the power broker is going to show up at some point or another, so.
Yeah.
That's my current thesis, is that Sharon works for the power broker, but I could be wrong. And I do think that ultimately, even if she does work for the power broker, she will come out on the side of good. But
I think so too.
There might be some hills and valleys in that journey. Yeah. So
yeah, it'll be fun. Sharon was definitely by far one of my least favorite characters in the MCU. So I'm sort of happy that they've brought her back in a more interesting role than the one that she previously occupied.
Good. Yeah. No, they're not good at women generally.
She was supposed to be like, you know, Steve's heterosexual match, and I'm like
I think it's nice to both, now that I'm hearing from you that she's coming back in a more interesting way with a more interesting character, and also I think the way that this movie is very deliberately laying out the ways that the American government uses people, and like the people don't always come out well on in the end, you know, like Isaiah, and to a lesser degree, like Sharon, who, you know, did the, what I'm assuming was the right thing based on the discussion, and still, you know, is on the run and hasn't talked to her family. and just doesn't really have very much. And also, this is just one last thought, is at the dedication for the Smithsonian, when I was rewatching the second time, I was like, I think Colonel Rhodes knows that something's going to happen. He's like very sober looking right now. He's very much like, So I wouldn't be surprised if he was at least somewhat aware that this shield might not stay.
Oh, that would be heartbreaking. I might have to watch that again. Rhodey is always kind of a little sober, but
yeah.
You might be right.
Like, I mean, that little conversation that he has with Sam, and interesting, I was reading a couple articles that interviewed Malcolm Spellman, and he's like, yeah, they're like the two main American, Black American superheroes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, I bet they talk about shit. And I'm like, yeah, that tracks. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah. I think that's probably the case.
I think this series is very interested in what does America mean? What does America mean to different people, whether they're, you know, people of color, people with more privilege, or people who are white, and like, how does it use that power? And especially how does it use that power in a world that's post-blip seems to be very unstable. I don't know if they done set up in any other movies where they like talked about the political situation, but millions of refugees and dealing with that, and people dying of tuberculosis in camps.
Yeah.
So,
well, there was that sort of throwaway line by Baron Zemo, of all people, who was like, oh yes, it's the anniversary of the Sokovia Memorial after Sokovia got completely consumed by the countries around it. Oh, none of you have been to see it? Oh, what a surprise.
Oh. Ouch. I don't even know what Sokovia is, to be fair. I do actually need to say I don't know what Sokovia
is. That's fair. Sokovia is the destruction of Sokovia is essentially what led to the whole Accords in the first place. It was a war-torn country in which the Avengers and the Marvel Universe involved themselves in this civil war in this country, and the country ended up completely decimated.
Mm.
And apparently never recovered. Gobbled up by its neighbors, and according to Zemo, just got forgotten by the Avengers, who were instrumental in this happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, Scarlet Witch is from there.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was... When I initially heard that Scarlet Witch was a thing, I was like, does this mean that mutants exist in main MCU? Because that would be a big change. And so I like did a little Googling. They're like, no, she's a sorcerer in this one. I'm like, okay, good. Because I was like, we don't need to start throwing the X-Men into the MCU. Too much is going on.
There's a lot happening.
So, yeah. But I'm interested to see where they go with the second half of the series, and you know how everything shakes out, who the power broker is, and how they end up dealing with Captain America as an icon.
Yeah.
And you know, these two men's relationship with Captain America.
Oh, John Walker makes me so upset. It's not his fault, but God, that makes me so upset.
It was very funny when Bucky was like, you have to fall on top of a grenade. He's like, actually, four times.
Special helmet.
It's like, not the point. Yeah. It was just very funny. Just like, got a lot of like funny little bits in that second episode. So
they were very good with the banter. They always are. Yeah. Oh, the Marvel series always are.
Very fun banter. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to the reintroduction of the Wakandans through the Dora Milaje. A lot of fun stuff, I think, is coming up for us.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a fun next three episodes.
Can I make a prediction?
Yeah.
That might be wrong. My prediction is, you know how they both told the therapist that they wanted to go on long vacations on a beach without the other one?
They're gonna go together.
Yes, that's my prediction for the end of the series. And maybe that's not a prediction so much as it's a wish in my heart.
I agree.
That's my current thesis. That's like closing shot of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
These guys need a vacation, and they need a beach vacation together. Yeah.
So hopefully we will, well, not hopefully, by the end of our next episode, we will know more, and we'll be talking about that next month. So before we close off, you know what we forgot to talk about? Because we both got so excited about MCU. What would you make as inspired by this movie?
I would make an Infinity Ring scarf. Well, not in particular with this movie, but just inspired by the MCU, you know, a five color infinity scarf. Mm-hmm. I've thought about it. I actually have the yarn for it, but
oh.
I haven't directions on it because it's a lot of stockinette.
Yes, that would be a lot of stockinette. I think what I would make for this, inspired by this series, is probably there was like a Captain America sweater that was floating around that was like very 1940s and incorporated, you know, the A for the shield and all that good stuff. So I would probably make that, which is very literal, but I feel cute. Yeah, it was like a fun little sweater. I don't remember if it was made for adults or for children, but that's probably what I would make in a very literal interpretation. So fun times. All right. So thank you everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next month. Bye.
Bye.